Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 12th and last episode of season one of Making Seamless Sales Show. Whether you're watching live, listening to the replay, or any of our channels, I appreciate that you've taken that time and I trust that you'll find it helpful. Please drop a note in the chat and like, subscribe, and share with others who can benefit. I'm coming to you live tonight from Mars, Pennsylvania, just north of Pittsburgh. The weather is definitely starting to turn cool. Fall is here. It has arrived. Joining me today is John Kerr, global pre-sales expert, speaker, and author of Mastering Technical Sales. We'll get to him after the first commercial break. He is the founder of Mastering Technical Sales and has a book of the same name. And by the way, in the show, I will probably refer to it as MTS. That's what it's known as, MTS, Mastering Technical Sales. We will explore how to ensure that SEs, sales engineers, are pulled into a deal precisely when needed, not too early, not too late, thus ensuring alignment with sales for proper business discovery, and how that collaboration can unlock literally millions of dollars in hidden revenue potential. Since this is the last show of this first season, and today's a kind of a special day that I'll mention here in a moment, instead of the usual Dear Artie segment that I had at the end of each episode where I answered your sales questions in the form of like a Dear Abby, I'm going to do a special tribute to one of my heroes, mentors, and examples, my dad, Paul Fromm, who went to be with the Lord 15 years ago today. So I'll touch on some of his contributions to the Apollo space program, insights from some of his handwritten notes, and a very special tie-in with his alma mater, University of Michigan. So stay tuned for that and more, because there's definitely some lessons we can learn, and there's a lot of things that I took from his example. So we'll get to that at the last segment. And welcome to all the family and friends that are watching too. For those of you who don't know, my name is Art Fromm. I'm the founder and president of Team Sales Development. I'm focused on pre-sales and sales transformation, helping B2B sales teams increase revenue, win rate, and client satisfaction. Through workshops, keynotes, this podcast, and my book of the same name, Making Seamless Sales, I provide and proven sales transformation frameworks and systems for pre-sales and sales teams. One client who tracked opportunities that used the program realized a 16-point increase in win rate from 58% to 74% and a 22% increase in bookings the first 2 years compared to opportunities that didn't use the elements of the program. So my goal is to equip you and your sales teams to improve your results. Before we get into tonight's show episode, a big thanks to last week's guest on episode 11, October 16th, Nikhil Sharma. I always say Sharma. I'm so sorry, Nikhil. It's Sarma. It just comes out naturally that way. We discussed how stalled opportunities value erosion over the deal cycle and losing to either a competitor or to status quo all stem from one common issue, which is an incomplete understanding of why change matters to the business. So Nikhil's value discovery map showed how sales teams can connect operational pains to business outcomes that drive executive decisions. The visual framework helps sales teams in three stakeholder levels. So first of all, the why, which anchors the deal in strategic priorities and financial impact that matters to executives. Number two, the what, which identifies the key performance indicators that the managers must deliver to the business. And number three, the how, which uncovers operational evidence that change will create measurable impact. So the result enables buyers to articulate the clear message that they can confidently take upstream internally and de-risk the decision, therefore building alignment even when the sellers aren't in the room. And that's what we all want, is the buyer to be selling when we're not there. So if you missed it, please go back, give it a listen. You'll come away with actionable strategies to transform your demos and close more deals. You can access that episode and all the other 11 episodes of Making SEMA Sales, as well as many more resources at teamsalesdevelopment.com on the Events and Articles tab. Now, just a bit about tonight's special guest, John Kerr, who started Mastering Technical Sales Business in the year 2000. I was introduced to John in 2011 by a mutual colleague, Tom King. Tom and I had worked together since 2004 when he was at ASK Learning, which, as I told in an earlier episode, was the global learning company that recruited and hired me in 2005, and eventually they closed in 2008. That led to me forming my own company, and also Tom then went on to form Up to Speed, which John merged with in 2023. So there's a lot of interconnections with all of these different relations we have and all that. And ever since then, and you know, since I've been working with John, I've been a facilitator and still am for Up to Speed as well and delivering John's materials. So interestingly enough, I found the original email where Tom introduced me to John as, quote, the best facilitator I have come across for all things pre-sales in my 12 years at ASK Learning. So it was very humbling to hear that from Tom. Now, strangely enough, and I'm not quite sure why, unfortunately, for some reason, I didn't respond to that initial introduction, but John and I eventually connected and started working together in 2013. So I can't even believe that that was so many years ago. It just doesn't even make sense that it could be that long. So I started to deliver the core MTS, Mastering Technical Sales, Business Value Discovery, and Whiteboarding workshops, which are our mainstay of John's offerings. They were a very nice addition to the portfolio of offerings that I was also providing for my clients. In 2022, I was honored that John asked me to help with the fourth edition of his seminal book, Mastering Technical Sales, which has been around for quite a long time. And John can talk about that a little bit, I think back to the early 2000s. And John asked me to contribute to and edit chapter 14, which is about remote demos and presentations, which we were coming fresh off of, or even still in, I guess, from the pandemic. So there was a lot around that. So I was very honored to do that. By now, I've probably delivered, I don't know, hundreds of workshop or maybe more than 100, let's just say, workshops for John, including Trusted Advisor, Executive Connection, Storytelling, and many more workshops as well. So I'm so thankful for that opportunity. Now, similar to Steve Bistritz, who was featured in episode 2, and Peter Cohan, who was featured in episode 9, John allowed me to use a couple of key concepts from his book and from the workshops in my book. And I just want to highlight those really quickly. We won't have time to talk about them in detail, but they're a great backdrop to what we're going to discuss. First of all is a survey that we like to share in the workshops that John did, which he conducted, showing that SEs, sales engineers, pre-sales, are trusted almost twice as much as their sales counterparts. And the way that that works into pre-sales having such a voice and being such an asset to the rest of the sales team, and particularly to the AE or AM, as I like to refer to them, because it makes for the nice seamless acronym, but how they are so helpful and important there. And then that's where this idea of the gap comes into play, because if there's a gap, that's not working seamlessly. So we'll talk about that. And then secondly, one of the things that we cover in John's business value discovery workshop is a really nice chart, which I think goes back to some others, including spin selling and some others, that shows the buyer engagement cycle with the ebb and flow throughout the buyer engagement of four key buyer concerns, specifically the needs that they have, the solution emphasis or focus on a solution, their focus or concern about cost, and then fourth, the focus and concern about risk. And I've taken that with John's permission and both of those concepts, and I've included them in the book and gone into great detail, especially about that buyer engagement lifecycle, because I put into that, what is the business decision maker doing during that? What's the technical decision maker doing during that? What are we doing as a sales team from an account management perspective and a pre-sales or SE perspective? So all that is there. So John has allowed me to put that into the book, into my Making Seamless Sales book. And John also graciously wrote a foreword for the book, which emphasizes the importance of listening to the prospect, which is a topic that we'll dig into much more deeply momentarily. So for all of this and for our longtime relationship and all the opportunities that we've had working together, I'm extremely grateful, and it's really an honor to have John on, which we'll do just shortly after the commercial here. So with this as a backdrop today, what John and I will explore is why sales engineers often are still being treated sort of like order takers instead of value creators. And more importantly, what SE management, and this is a whole area that John concentrates on, is sales engineering or pre-sales management, what they can do to break that cycle and turn every demo and technical proof into a true business conversation, which is really, frankly, all that matters to the prospect or the buyer. So after a brief break, John and I are going to dig into why this disconnect still exists, what it's really costing companies, and the practical frameworks that can help your teams create measurable business value, not just technical wins. So let's go ahead. If we can go to the break, we will be back in just a couple of minutes and we'll talk with John Kerr of Mastering Technical Sales. So we'll be right back.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back, and I would like to welcome to the show and introduce my friend and colleague, John Kerr. So, John, you heard a little bit of that background there, but let me just say real quick to introduce you a little bit further. John is the Chief Content Officer of Up to Speed and founder of Mastering Technical Sales, a global leader in professional sales development for sales engineers through training, consulting, and keynote programs, and building on his best-selling book, Mastering Technical Sales, The Sales Engineer's Handbook, which is this one right here. John has trained over 100,000 professionals and is published widely across major media and learning platforms. A former executive at Oracle, HP, and other major firms, he now advises startups and academic programs while balancing life between Longboat Key, Florida, which is lovely, and Philadelphia. So, John, welcome to the Making Seamless Sales show.
Thanks, Art. Really appreciate being on here and helping you bring the season to a close, right?
It's exciting. That's right. Exactly. Yep. I'm glad to have you on. So if you can briefly fill us in a little bit on any of the pieces, maybe including when the book first came out and your current focus, you know, as far as how you got to where you are now.
Wow. Well, the genesis of the book was way back in 1999, believe it or not. And I just got frustrated because I couldn't find anybody who could train my engineers. So I sat down with Aaron Bolick, my co-author at the time. We came up with the idea to create a book that was a handbook for sales engineers. And the first edition was published in 2001. And it's been an awesome journey since then, filled with, you know, great folks like yourself. Right now, I am really the front man for the company for Up to Speed Marketing Technical Sales. So I do a lot of interviews like this, keynote speeches, sales kickoffs, things like that. Not quite so much of the everyday training anymore. Plus, I'm working on updating the books and I'm working on a murder mystery. So that is my big project I'm working on right now when I'm not traveling. And of course, the hero is a sales engineer. So there you go.
That's not a spoiler, though.
No, it's not.
All right. And you mentioned when we talked, whatever day that was, yesterday or whatever, the weeks just, you know, blend by here, about the fact that you were re-releasing the trusted engine. Tell me about what you're re-releasing shortly.
Sure. So one of the books that came out a while back was The Trusted Advisor Sales Engineer. And you know, everyone tells you, you've got to become a trusted advisor to your clients. No one ever tells you how, mm-hmm. and no one ever tells you how you can measure it. Like, how do you know if you're actually trusted and how can you improve that trust? So the first version of this came out, gosh, like 8-9 years ago. The great benefit about publishing on the Amazon Kindle platform is you can do incremental updates, which I've been doing over the years, but I thought it was time for a more significant update. So we've updated everything in here, got 2025 data, plus added a new chapter on trust, AI, and the sales engineer, which is a topic we'll get into, I suspect, within the next 10 or 15 minutes.
All right. Sounds good. So let's get into it, starting with the challenge, which sales engineers being sort of order takers instead of value creators. And I know one of the most profound things that we cover in the MTS workshops is the expression, your solution has no inherent value. Yet studies continue to show that too many sales engineers get pulled into demos without proper qualification or discovery, and therefore losing to your favorite phrase, which I love, is do nothing incorporated.
Yeah.
So why does this disconnect continue?
Oh, you know, if we could only solve that problem, life would be so much easier for everybody, I think. So I'm a little bit of a kind of counterculture person on this in terms of the reason why it happens is that there's this thing, I call it the dash to demo, right? And everybody wants to dash to demo, show the product, get in front of the customer. And a lot of times we demo way too early in the sales cycle and mess up an opportunity to progress the deal. So you know, one of my basic beliefs is that you know, demos are nice and a lot of companies focus just on demo training, but actually what's important is discovery up front. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's no good being a perfect shot with a rifle if you don't have a target to aim at. And discovery kind of paints the target, if you like to use a somewhat militaristic tone. So that's the most important thing, I think, is you know, you get dragged into demos because the rep thinks it's the right thing to do. But if you don't know why you're doing a demo and what are the problems that you've got to solve or what are the gains you're trying to achieve, it's a pointless and time-wasting exercise. And then D&I, Do Nothing Incorporated, does indeed win 42% of deals. You know, just imagine what it will do to your pipeline if you could reduce that 42% to 32% or 22%. I mean, like, you know, your CFO and CRO would be dancing on tabletops, right?
Yes. And the discovery is what helps us uncover what the client does see so that you can show the value in the solution. So we'll get to that in a minute. So we want the solution to have value. It just doesn't have inherent value. Since a lot of your emphasis is on SE management, what role does SE management play then when sales teams bypass the consultative process and maybe even jump straight to a show them the solution? Where does the SE management come into play, or what are some of the gaps or breakdowns in that realm? And then we'll talk later about what we could do about it.
Sure. Well, so there's a tactical approach and a strategic approach here. And even a long-term tactical one, which is reps who do what you just described rarely hit their quota with regularity. So they kind of get, retired out the system, as it were, anyway. So eventually, karma wins. but the important thing, what SE management could do is pretty much every sales organization I have ever interacted with lives and dies at that first level of management. And actually the relationship between the first line SE manager and the first line sales manager is like one of the most important relationships in the entire company. And it kind of needs to be like a marriage or a partnership in that the SE manager needs to trust the sales manager that they're going to properly qualify deals. And the sales manager needs to trust the SE manager that when they ask for sufficient information about a deal, i.e. discovery, that it should be provided. Really, although experienced SEs can deal with reps who do the dash to demo, if you just have a process in place, like any sales process, that the first line managers on both sides, as it were, making it seamless, to use your phrase, agree on, then things progress much faster. You get a higher closure rate, less friction in the sales cycle, more add-ons, faster time to deployment, all those great things.
So it sounds like in some organization, and we know one of the things that's conspiring against sales and pre-sales working together is it's often two separate organizations. And it does rely on the managers to talk. So one of the things that could lead to the dash to demo is management not being lockstep on the importance of qualification, discovery, and setting up both sales and pre-sales for success. And more importantly, setting up the buyer for success as they're working through their journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really the most critical thing. I've yet to meet a sales engineer who doesn't believe they ever have enough discovery, right? So it is the number one source of friction in the entire sales cycle. Is the SE always wants one more meeting, one more conversation, one more review of an architecture diagram, whereas the rep is paid to go from lead to close as fast as they possibly can. So that there's a natural conflict there, and you need to find a balance. So as an SE, you can't be, I need one more meeting, I need one more meeting all the time, because then you are, foreseen as friction in the sales cycle. But mm-hmm. as a rep, if you're just sliding through as fast as you can, then you don't have sufficient information, and you're going to pay for it because you're going to commit to a deal and it's not going to forecast, not going to close, rather, because you missed something. There is that balance. And again, it's that seamless approach to opportunity management between sales engineering and sales, plus mm-hmm. partners and pro services and anyone else who's engaged.
Yeah. And that's why DNI, as you call it, Do Nothing Incorporated, is just as much of a competitor as an actual named competitor, and very often lose to that. Let's talk a little bit about some of the impact. I recall that you mentioned, and this sounds like a really high number, you mentioned that a top sales engineer represents potentially 6 to 8 million in incremental value for their company. So what specific opportunities are companies missing when SEs and AMs or AEs are not collaborating effectively?
Yeah. So one of the things we do in our SE leadership workshops is we run a little exercise, and it's a bit more than a thought experiment. So imagine that your number one or number two sales engineer that you have working in your organization decides to leave. Right? Not run over by a bus, but they win the lottery, right? It's a pleasant departure. What impact would that have on your company? Both the soft impact and the hard impact, assuming that you're running flat out and there's not spare capacity, you can just drop somebody in. And when you work it through, it's about equivalent to that individual's quota, as it were. Some SEs don't have quota, plus there's recruitment costs and everything else. But for a lot of organizations, it is between 6 to 8 million, whether that's dollars, pounds, euros. It's a lot of money. So that is the value of what a top performing sales engineer, and if you lose them, so if you've got a well-oiled machine like that, I mean, goodness me, don't you want to do the best you can? If you take that $8 million number, say, and divide it by 2,000, which is the number of working hours that you have in a year, that's quote, no, the billing rate for your SEs. That's $4,000 an hour that your SEs have to generate in order to, meet that 8 million. It's a heavy burden.
And we've all heard the expression, which proves to be true, is that people don't usually leave their company, they usually leave their manager. So if SEs aren't feeling supported by their manager and that coordination isn't happening at that first level, as you said, then this could be, effect on morale and things like that. And for a while, at least, it was pretty easy for SE to jump from company to company because there was a lot of openings and things. That's a little bit, maybe a little bit changed right now, but it's significant in terms of that impact. What other things from an SE management perspective, do you feel that poor sales and pre-sales alignment can impact, regarding individual deals or the pipeline health or competitive positioning?
I think each side needs to understand that not everyone is like you and they're different. What one of the most terrible things I see is when, individual sales SEs or a small SE organization reports into a sales manager or sales director. And unless they're really experienced, they don't understand that SEs need something different and they're different animals, cats and dogs sleeping together, right? And vice versa. Sales reps, we like to joke they're coin operated, but they're way, way smarter than that. So SEs have to give them credit for, the bit, the iceberg you can't see, the sales operations that you can't see that reps tend to do. So I think fully appreciating what the other side brings, rather than complaining and whining about it all the time, really does help that seamless partnership and get everything going in the right direction.
Yeah, and it definitely could impact things like the SEs not being happy, not helping the reps make their quota, the pipeline health, because one of the things that can happen is that we chase and chase and chase, and it really is a funnel, like a sales funnel, and that implies that stuff is dropping out way late in the process. And that's because, to your point, it wasn't properly qualified or discovery wasn't done. And then, but the sales rep is still trying. Yeah, we still have a shot at this. We still have a shot at it. Whereas what it really should turn into instead of a funnel is more of a pipeline when we're properly qualifying. And sometimes it even takes the SE to say, this, I see some concerns here, and therefore we may need to walk away from this. But the impact on a pipe, on a funnel, on a pipeline that's a more of a funnel is that you're going to lose deals late in the process, and that doesn't help with things like forecasting and things like
Yep,
that.
that is painful. And actually, one piece of advice that I give to first line SE managers and even experienced SEs is, your job, believe it or not, is not to make the salesperson happy. Your job is to make the salesperson successful,
Ah,
and
nice.
make the customer happy and successful. And happy and successful, they may sound like they're the same, but how you get there is totally different. And I think if as an SE manager you bear that in mind, it kind of helps be a guiding light for you in terms of how you interact with not just sales, but other parts of the organization too.
And so, whereas oftentimes SEs aren't, well, it's more and more they are being given a portion of the revenues. There's KPIs, key performance indicators, and things right now that tie to annual recurring revenue and things like that. But really, it is the salesperson that's got a base salary, and then the bulk of their income comes from the commission. So they're just feeling compelled to chase after everything. I think there's something to be said about that when this is broken, that salesperson is at risk for reaching their quota. And
Oh,
it
yeah.
doesn't do them any good to try, like you said, to slide through it as quickly as possible, because that's just going to be a matter of probability that they do it enough times that something lands. But talk a little bit more about that potential impact on them as far as that the quota attainment and things like
Sure.
that.
Well, as most SEs are leveraged in terms of maybe 25% of their take-home pay is based upon sales achievement and quota, which is nowhere near as much as the reps are. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, when the number is missed, the salespeople are the first ones who, are shot, are whacked, and are fired and riffed out of the company. Sales engineers tend to stay longer. So you have to make some pretty, horrible mistakes in order to get fired as an SE in terms of messing up a deal. Whereas a rep, the amount of, rope that you're given, right? It's different. So they'll tend to, as said, whack you first before they hit the SE. So yeah, their family, their livelihood is at risk.
And which makes the SE's life more miserable because now you have a new sales rep coming in, and then the buyer, the client is getting more and more people that they're trying to deal with too. I remember one client that when I went in there, they had this plaque on the wall, and they had all the sales reps that they had had over like the last 3 years, and it was I think like 12 sales reps that somehow or another, because there was people jumbled up or they didn't meet their quota and they got fired. So there are a lot of implications about that. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about what we could do about this and then what are the benefits to the organization. So we'll be back in about 2 minutes. Misalignment within your sales team or with a client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever wondered what truly lies beneath the calm? I'm Jacinta Yang. Join me every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Talk Radio NYC as we explore healing, self-discovery, and a space where science meets spirits to help you find peace in a busy world. Take a deep breath and tune in to Beneath the Calm, where every conversation guides you back to the calm within.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Everybody, welcome back. So we're talking with John Kerr, Mastering Technical Sales, and we started to talk about the situation where there's a misalignment between sales and pre-sales and the way that sometimes sales management isn't completely on top of that and what some of the implications are. Now, John, let's shift to, okay, what do we do about it? And I know that we could do a whole show on this or maybe multiple hours, and that's why you have workshops and seminars and everything else that covers this. Let's start with building that bridge. So walk us through a little bit what proper business value discovery looks like when it takes place and should take place before any type of technical proof or technical demonstration.
Sure. So there's two types of discovery. There's business value discovery and there's technical discovery. And I kind of think of them as being like intertwined, like the twin strands of DNA helix. Every SE in the world is good at technical discovery. So we'll talk about business value discovery. This might be multiple meetings before the demo. It might be a single meeting. It could be 5 or 10 minutes of conversation before you go into a demo. But you still need to be able to set the scene. So it looks like this. One is before you even walk into the room, virtual or not, you have to do your research. That is so much easier now with all the AI tools available than even it was 5 years ago. So it can take a first pass guess at what the pains are of the customer. Then you go into the conversation, you try and identify all the issues before you dive down and start talking about anyone, no matter how tempting it might be. If you think the customer's left something out, add it. Or ask permission to add it. And it's essential the SE does this, because if the SE does it, the customer will normally accept it. If the rep does it, they're going to think, ah, you're trying to sell me something. Then prioritize it. So you've got to listen at 1, 2, 3, 4. Once you've got those, then You need to be looking for evidence. How do you know it's a problem? How do you know it's resolved? And impact. What's the impact of this problem now? And if we fix it, what are the gains that you're going to get out of it? And when we do that, we look for three things: time, people, and money. So if as an SE, you can equate a pain or a gain to time, people, or money, then you've pretty much done your job, because then you should be able to link that to your portfolio and be able to, bring that out and highlight that in the demo. So that, in a nutshell, is MTS 104, business value discovery.
Yeah, you
With
just
one
did a
important piece missing that we're going to get to in a bit.
yeah, that you just did a 1 day workshop in, two and a half minutes.
There you go.
Some key points, and we can't dwell too much on this, but some key points is that would be done for each stakeholder, because different people at different levels in the organization have different needs. So maybe say a little bit about that.
That is. So, particularly if you're selling what I enduringly call IT plumbing, right? Which is, infrastructure to the IT department. The database group might have a different opinion than the security group, from networking group, from, the hardware group, from the cloud architecture group. So you need to talk to everybody, understand what their priorities are, what their gains are, what their pains are, and triangulate it back. So when you're doing a demo, and, if you've got four or five different types of stakeholders in the room, not just in backgrounds, but also in, leveling the food chain, you can target each and every one of them with something. So don't think in a complex sale that one discovery call is going to get it done, even with, the best AI assist in the world.
Yeah, and there's tremendous value in that, because we, as sort of an outsider, get to see a view that sometimes they can't even see, because they know their own little silos and things, and we can help put that picture together. So what frameworks should the SE leadership establish with sales leadership to help bridge this gap and ensure that the SEs and AMs are working together, and then linking, not just showing technology for technology's sake, because it has no inherent value, but linking it to the business outcomes. So what kind of frameworks or relationships are for the SE leaders and sales
Well,
leaders?
if you take that phrase, like the complete phrase, is your solution has no inherent value until the customer says it does, right? So your job as the SEAE team is to, help the customer understand the value that your solution, I hate that word, solution, can actually provide.
It's much maligned.
It is much maligned. I would say no customer in the world buys solutions, right? They buy outcomes, because you have to speak about the outcomes. So the framework we use to, pivot from technology to business, is something that we call FAB. So I tell people that be the fabulous sales engineer, and that stands for features, advantages, and benefits. As engineers, we're great at features, right? We love to talk about bits and bytes and speeds and feeds. And we can live there all day. And to, mid-level management executives, it means nothing. Then you've got advantages, which is what those features actually do. And as engineers, we're okay with that. And then the last step, the B, is the benefits. So what that means to you, Mr. Customer, is, and explaining it in terms of time, people, and money. And that's where reps are normally better than the SEs. So quite often, the SE can do the F and the A, and the rep can start on the B and kind of drive that home. And in a perfect team, that's how it can really work. So, it's not just be the fabulous sales engineer, it's be the fabulous sales team. And don't get mired in the features and even the advantages. You've got to drive through to the benefits. And the customer needs to say, aha, right? Got it. Right? And when the customer says, got it, or I see what you mean, then they've acknowledged value. And that is a massive step forward in the sales process.
Yeah, and that goes back to what you were saying about the marriage, because with FAB, it's not just FA or B separately. They are completely related to make it FAB, and a fabulous SE, fabulous team, gives the essences that the SE really needs to focus on, and sales at the sort of two extremes, but then a really healthy overlap in the middle. And I know one thing that's always helped me out with whenever I facilitate this is the F and the A is usually more about us. It's about our thing and what our thing does. And the B is why they would care. So that goes back to like the F and the A is the solution in your parlance, right? And the B is the why would they care? It's the outcome. The B is the outcome. What does it do for them? And that's the only thing that really matters. And like you said, the chart that I was referring to in the intro, where it shows sales engineers are automatically trusted twice as much as sales is. Well, this is something that can really help. There you go. That's it. this is something that can really help level that playing field because, or help with the approach for the buyer, because now you've got the SEs who are trusted laying the groundwork, and then married right into that is the salesperson. And now their trust goes up. So any salespeople that are listening, sales managers that are listening, this isn't just about like something that one part wants the other part to do. It's really beneficial for both. We've got a few minutes left here. Let's shift to what are some of the gains then? And we touched on this a little bit earlier, but let's bring it home with what gains can SE management achieve by addressing this gap? And even, you know, why does this make so much difference to the stakeholder?
Sure. So there's lots of gains. One is you end up with happier and more satisfied sales engineers. And it's not all about us, but you know, if you're a manager, you do care about your people. But it makes a massive difference to the pipeline and to deal closure rates. We ran out business value discovery through one of our larger clients. And on average, each SE that went through the class reported over the course of the year, $2 million in extra opportunities that the workshop had positively impacted. So if you multiply that by the number of SEs they had, which was hundreds, massive expansion of the pipeline and that, as that channels down. So that's just an enormous impact that you get from that. And then lastly, we kind of pivot back to where we started, the trusted advisor sales engineer is by working together, sales and AEs, right? For those of you on video, right? There's my T-shirt. Trust your SE.
John's always great with the T-shirts. Just as an aside, John does on LinkedIn, he does a book very often. And thanks for doing my book a while ago. And then he always has a shirt that goes with it. So we've always told John, you need a side business just selling T-shirts. So yeah, sorry, I didn't want to interrupt.
That's no, awesome. That's okay. And so ultimately, I mean, everything we've spoken about ultimately comes down to the customer. If as the sales team, you can generate that trust with the customer, so the customer believes that you are acting in their best interest, that helps everybody, right? Happier customers, happier salespeople, happier sales engineers, happy CFOs, because they can stand in front of Wall Street and talk about good results. So you know, trust is the oil, the lubricant that runs the engine of sales. And sales engineers are the people who apply that trust all over the place to make sure that it actually happens. So you know, I think if there's one takeaway for your listeners is, you know, trust, particularly in the age of AI, trust and the humanity that goes with it is just so important. And it's what differentiates us from the robots.
Right, exactly. And remember, John's releasing an update to his Trusted Advisor Sales Engineer book. So if you don't have it already, or if you want to refresh, grab that, and that'll help you apply these concepts as well. John, it's been a great pleasure having you here and sharing this with the audience. I really appreciate it. Any concluding remarks, and then the best way to contact you? And by the way, all the contact information is in the show notes as well, but I'll just let you have the last word here.
Thanks. Oh, I don't often get the last word. please go visit the website, www.martiantechnicalsales.com. We've trained 100,000 sales engineers and a bunch of SE leaders as well. If you want to see what we do, read the books. There's three books. There's the main handbook, the Trust Advisor, the SE Manager's Handbook. If you like what you read, come see us. Maybe you'll get Art as one of the facilitators. If you disagree with what I've written, then go work with somebody else. But it's out there in the public domain, and boy, it's made a lot of people successful. So trust.
All right. Thank you so much, John.
Okay. Thanks, Art.
Take care.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a purpose-driven individual looking for deeper healing, clarity, and growth? Welcome to the Expansion Room, a transformative space for purpose-driven individuals. I'm Siobhan Larice, host, licensed therapist, and coach. Join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Well, that was a great segment with John. If you are watching this, you may want to rewind that and check it out again. Or if you're watching the recording, that is, or if you watched it live, check that out again. Tons of takeaways. So again, thank you so much, John. Really appreciate that. So as I said at the beginning of the show, today is a very special and sad but great day because we can remember my dad. So instead of my usual Dear Artie segment where I answer your sales challenges and questions, I do want to, in this final episode of this season of Making Seamless Sales, pay tribute to a huge influencer in my life, schooling, and career. And that's my dad, Paul Fromm. So it was 15 years ago today when I was coming home from a trip to Asia. And I landed in Chicago before my final connecting flight to Buffalo when I got the news that everyone dreads. When I called my wife upon landing, instead of her being happy to hear that I was back, I was greeted with her sobbing, shaky voice, timidly saying, "I have bad news. Your dad is gone." I couldn't believe it. Gone. I was like, what's going on here? The words took only seconds to hear, but it took forever to sink in. Gone. I was devastated. At 81, it was a life cut too short, but he lived a good and full life. It seems that 11 p.m. the night before, 15 years ago, that would have been last night, my dad had a massive aneurysm and now was being kept on life support awaiting my arrival, so I could be with him and our family as we said our last goodbyes 15 years ago tonight. Now, unfortunately, I can't be with my mom tonight in Buffalo since this is the last episode of the show and I needed to do it live for my home office. And I also had a virtual client delivery today that I needed to do. But here's what's cool. I know she's watching. She's watching live on YouTube at 92 years old. So love you, Mom, and all you and Dad have done for me and our family. So to honor my dad as a celebration of his life, I just want to pay tribute with him and share a few things with you about the amazing man and inspiration that he has been for me and how he and my mom have truly provided a wonderful life for our family. And maybe there's a few things that we can learn together from him and his legacy along the way. Where do I start? Well, he helped man get to the moon in 1969, but I'll get there soon enough. Let's back up just a little bit. My dad lost his dad when he was 2, which I find remarkable because although he never had a dad, he became a dad to emulate, caring, resourceful, resilient, very smart, ambitious worker, wonderful husband, father, grandfather, faithful to God and to family. He was very active in his home church and in church-related organizations. He showed us that faith in God and love of family are vitally important and will ground us and equip us for service and help us to get through the inevitable challenges of life. That's at least one lesson we can all benefit from. He had other substantial contributions too, starting with his connection to Go Blue, the rallying cry of the University of Michigan. After attending community college for a year, my dad attended the University of Michigan from 1949 to 1951. He was very active at the on-campus University Chapel and with many university activities and organizations. He felt good about the University of Michigan. My dad tells the story that in 1950, he and his roommate, Bob Neer, attended a University of Michigan hockey game. And as corroborated by Bob Neer himself, my dad suddenly stood up and began shouting, "Go Blue!" out of the blue. No rhyme or reason. You see, at first, the other spectators were confused and actually laughed. The cheer at the time was, "Go Michigan!" Yet my dad persisted, "Go Blue!" And after a few minutes, others in the crowd began to join in. The rhythmic "Go Blue!" took hold, eliciting strong emotion from the crowd and creating a powerful sense of connection to the team. Bob Neer described the event as absolutely spontaneous, and both he and my dad were amazed at how quickly the simple two-word phrase united the crowd. In the fall of 1950, he continued the cheer as corroborated by Ann Arbor native Peg Dugan, who said she first heard my dad yell "Go Blue!" at the football home opener, again with the crowd joining in. I was very blessed to see this in action this past Saturday at the Big House, the University of Michigan Stadium. My wife, my sister, her husband, our daughter, her husband, and our two grandsons attended the game and heard the crowd of over 110,000 people. Of course, a lot of them were Michigan or were Washington fans, but there was a crowd of 110,000 people chanting "Go Blue!" with one voice that started with my dad 75 years ago. So the lesson learned is you never know the impact one voice could have. You never know the impact one voice could have. After graduating from the University of Michigan with a BSME specializing in hydraulics and pneumatics, my dad initially worked for AMF Bowling Company and subsequently landed a job at Bell Aircraft, which turned into Bell Aerosystems, which turned into Bell Aerospace. So you could see the progression. They're the originators of the Bell helicopter. And he worked there. He worked in Wheatfield, New York, north of Buffalo. And he served in the Army for a couple years during that time, too. It was at Bell Aerosystems that he contributed to man landing on the moon. When the astronauts were training to land on the moon with the lunar lander, they needed to simulate the 1/6 gravity of the moon here on Earth. So Bell, with my dad's help, designed the Lunar Landing Training Vehicle, or sometimes referred to as the Lunar Landing Research Vehicle. It had a gimbal engine that always pointed down no matter which way the vehicle articulated, such that it would simulate the 1/6 gravity of the moon. My dad designed the hydraulic system to control that gimbal engine. Now, as some of you may recall, the first manned lunar landing in 1969 did not quite go as planned because just with seconds left of fuel, the programmed flight path was about to take Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin into a crater. So Neil Armstrong had to take control and land the vehicle manually. When he got back from the moon, he said that the LLTV with the gimbal engine perfectly prepared him to make that landing. My dad was also involved in the Agena rocket engine that was a key component of all kinds of different systems for missile systems and to blast the lunar module off the moon. And he did many, many other amazing projects. But here's the lesson and the takeaway. He was humble and thankful through it all. He was doing his job to the best of his ability. He was happy that he could use the talents that God had given him. So all of this has been a huge influence for me to get my BSME degree, leading to my career, ultimately in software and sales enablement. He was a great example of humility and service. Finally, I found some handwritten notes. I'm not quite sure if they were from university or during his career, but a couple of them jumped out at me. One that's pretty cool is there's an article that he cut out that's how to present an idea. And, you know, that's part of what I teach today with Great Demo and other things like that of, you know, how to present ideas. But I want to share a couple quick things with you on this one little doodle pad, note pad that he had here. It says, Too many professional people write to impress rather than to express. And I think that's part of what John and I were talking about with Fab. It's not about impressing somebody with your solution. It's about to express the way that they can be helped, the way that they can benefit, the business outcomes. The other thing that somebody that he also put on here was, think of whom you are writing to and what you will say. And make sure that what you write has purpose. Make sure that you are writing the what, why, and the so what. So this is notes that he took, you know, I don't know how many, 50 years ago or whatever it would have been, 75, I guess. The other thing that's really great, and this, I won't put this to the camera because it'll probably go out of focus, but he actually wrote here about them, whenever you, in for informational material, always use an inverted pyramid for all of you great demo fans. This is something he wrote a long time ago that we know today. So the lesson here is never stop learning. Even well-worn concepts can be useful and will stand the test of time. Thank you so much for letting me spend a few minutes to honor my dad today. I hope that it's been an encouragement to you and will help you to continue his legacy of positive influence. So here's to you, Dad. Love you to the moon and back. Go Blue. All right. Thanks for letting me share that. Listen, this is the end of our season of Making Seamless Sales. Thanks again to John Kerr for sharing your ideas, for SEs to continue to be more strategic, for SE managers to support them. Before you go, please check out teamsalesdevelopment.com website, including the events page for details about today's show, as well as other previous and upcoming events. Contact me to discuss your plans for sales kickoff, other events to improve the results for your sales team. I offer keynotes, seminars, workshops, CRM integrated tools that help sales sell. And of course, don't forget about the book of the same name as the show, Making Seamless Sales. There's all kinds of things in here, including the material from John, from Steve Bistritz, from Peter Cohan, and my material blended into it. So thank you very much, everybody. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Jesse, for all your help in producing, and for Sam Leibowitz for running this whole thing. It's been an absolute pleasure. Until next time, let's just leave it like that. Here's to making seamless sales. Take care, everybody.